LGR News Director Joshua Dixon. Life in southwestern Minnesota and around the world has been upended for the past few weeks because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But amid all the confusion, concern, and hysteria of this unprecedented situation, what are the facts? And what specifically are the facts locally here in KLGR land? Yesterday, I sat down with four area residents who have to deal with this unfolding crisis as it's happening. Redwood Falls Mayor Tom Quackenbush, Dr. Cindy Gronau of Caris Health Redwood Family Medicine, Lydia Lepke, RN, who does infection control at Caris Health Redwood, and Lauren Melanthine, Emergency Preparedness Coordinator for Southwest Health and Human Services. We talked yesterday about how the COVID-19 virus is changing life at area hospitals and clinics, whether you have COVID-19 or not, and the importance of taking the situation seriously, but that it's not necessary to panic. So, here we go. We're sitting here in the studio now, and some of you might have noticed that life is a little interesting these days, and so we are going to be speaking with some local residents who are having to deal with the COVID-19 situation in a very real way as part of their job, part of their daily life right now. And I just want to introduce everybody, or have you introduce yourselves.
Yeah, Tom Quackenbush, Mayor of Redwood Falls and Plant Manager at Daktronics.
I'm Cindy Gronau, and I'm a family practice provider here within the community and am the Chief of Staff at the hospital currently.
Lauren Melantine here from Southwest Health and Human Services. I'm the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator there.
And Lydia Lipke, I do infection prevention and employee health at the hospital here, Caris Health in Redwood.
Now, I've been a little nervous about interviewing the four of you here all at one time because I don't even know where to begin. And so I figured out the simplest way. We're going to start at the most basic level with Cindy here. So you are a physician at Caris Health in Redwood, and you're having to deal with this basically at ground level. And so what I was hoping just to start off with, if someone comes in now about anything, I mean, whether it's a respiratory problem or anything, measles, mumps or something, what is the process now that you have to go through, and how is that different from maybe 2 weeks ago?
So the changes that we have made at the clinic currently are that our patients that were coming in for well exams, such as physicals, well childs, and those type of visits are being limited. Some of the well child exams that are getting immunizations are still coming in, but we have made it so that only the patients that it's absolutely necessary to come in are being seen at the clinic. The other thing that you will see is that you will be screened at the front door. And so you will be screened for any symptoms of COVID, but also of respiratory symptoms. We've also changed how our urgent care operates. And so those people that are considered to have a respiratory illness will be seen in the lower level of the clinic and will have a separate entryway. And those, again, will be screened at the front door and directed as such. Other patients that we would consider relatively well, such as a sprained ankle and such, would be seen on the upper level in our urgent care.
When you say people will be screened when they come into the clinic, what does the screening consist of?
So we have a staff member sitting right in the entryway of the clinic, and they have the computer, and they also have the questions that are asked, and those include whether they have had a fever, a cough, or shortness of breath, or what other symptoms they are being seen for. If those patients have respiratory symptoms, then what happens is the patient is to put on a mask, and then they will be directed as to where they will go in the building. They will also have a card that states that they have been screened.
So there are people sitting at home right now, and the snow is melting. It's allergy season starting to come back. Maybe people are concerned. What should people be looking for specifically for the COVID-19 as different than just regular allergies coming right now?
So if you were to have allergy-type symptoms right now, you could have a runny nose, some drainage down the back of your throat, or even a cough that's caused by some drainage down the back of your throat. You typically would not have any symptoms of a fever that is associated with a cough and also shortness of breath, which those are the main symptoms that we are looking for with COVID-19. And also the other things that we are looking for are if you have recently traveled or if you have been in contact with a known positive COVID-19 patient.
Lydia now, you're sort of in charge of infection control at Caris Health at the clinic and the hospital. What is your team looking for these days, and what are you trying to be aware of?
We are looking for the same types of things that they are at the clinic. We are also screening people. We've been directing people that need to be seen in the emergency department to use the emergency department entrance. We screen those individuals at the door for the same symptoms, fever, cough, shortness of breath, which in the infection prevention world, that should happen all the time, and we try to do that all the time, because whether we have COVID-19 or something else, those individuals should still get a mask at the door. So we've really ramped that up and put more emphasis on that. And then those individuals, just like at the clinic, get a mask and get roomed immediately. At the front entrance, we're working on screening individuals there as well for the same symptoms to make sure people that shouldn't be there are not there. So if they're not coming for to be seen, or if they're coming for something that isn't the emergency department and they have respiratory symptoms, that's when we would probably say you need to go back home and not come while you're ill. We've also started to enforce visitor restrictions. So for the well-being of our patients, of our workers, and for the community as a whole, we are asking that people do not bring visitors with them or companions when they come to the hospital. And that's a temporary thing. We don't anticipate that to be an extended thing, but that is what we're doing at this time.
One question about the whole issue of quarantine and such. One thing that there's so much hysteria in the media right now is it's sounding like, oh my God, I've got COVID-19, I'm going to die. But that's not the case, as I've been finding out, that many of the people who have been diagnosed with it, they just go home for 2 weeks. How serious is this? Let's put it this way. At the most basic level, how serious is this going to be for most people if they find out they've gotten it?
So I think it's important to follow like what the CDC and the MDH is saying. The data is still coming from everywhere. It's coming from other countries. It's coming from here in the United States. I think I heard one physician say we need to respect the virus because it can. Mm-hmm. Can kill certain people, but we shouldn't necessarily be afraid of it. So we need to react to it. We need to take the steps that the CDC and the Department of Health are saying, because it can be a serious virus and it can cause death, but not to panic. We are still at this time only asking people to come to the hospital that really need to be seen. So if you have a mild illness and are at home and do not need to see a physician, we're not asking those people to come in. It's the people that are seriously ill that need to come in and be seen. We are asking, if you do have the respiratory symptoms and you feel like you need to come and be seen, that you call ahead.
Okay, the reason I ask is people need to be concerned, people need to treat it with respect and follow the rules, but I'm just hoping maybe we can tamp down some of the panic, as this isn't something people necessarily need to be terrified of.
So with regards to the panic and people being concerned about supplies that they mm-hmm. will have at home, people are quarantined for 14 days is okay. The longest that we have quarantined people that have had contact there, so those are mainly the people that it's only going to last for 14 days.
Okay.
And so hoarding products, hoarding hand sanitizer and toilet paper and food and those type of things really is not helping any of our community out. If we could be mindful of that the longest that we would be quarantined would be 14 days, that would be really helpful.
I think that's very important to get out. As far as I know, there hasn't been anyone in Redwood County at this point, although it is getting closer. Say someone were to go in, they're concerned they might have the symptoms, they go into the clinic to be examined, and it turns out they are diagnosed. What is the process that would happen next?
So with regards to thinking that you have the symptoms and what you should do about that, first of all, if you have a mild illness and are not having significant respiratory difficulties such as shortness of breath, we are asking that you stay home. If you have questions about whether you could be COVID positive or not, or be exposed, please call our triage line for that, and we can help direct you whether you need to come in or not. Now, currently, we are not testing any patients on the outpatient basis for COVID-19. And the reasons for that are that the Minnesota Department of Health has reserved those now the testing only for inpatients. And so if you come to the emergency room, you will not be tested there either unless it is deemed that you are sick enough that you will be an inpatient.
And say somebody's tested and it turns out they test out positive. What will that trigger?
So what happens with that is that if you have a mild enough illness, then you would be sent home. However, that's really not our testing process anymore. So you would have to be hospitalized as an inpatient with this significant illness in order to even receive testing. So you would be treated appropriately for your illness as an inpatient.
If someone is diagnosed, this happens instantly. They're instantly hospitalized, or are they allowed to run home and pick up supplies, or how does this work?
No, you would be instantly hospitalized. So if you were deemed that you were appropriate to get testing, that you would have to be in an inpatient setting. And so you would have to be sick enough to be in the hospital. The other thing to remember is that the turnaround time, the minimum turnaround time to get testing back is 3 days.
Oh,
however,
okay.
It has been up to 96 hours to receive the testing back from Minnesota Department of Health.
So say somebody is tested, they receive a positive, and at that point you would have to notify public health.
I can speak to that because the person that will actually notify public health will be Minnesota Department of Health. They will get notified of the positive case, and then they will get a hold of us to go into more of contact investigation. So they would recommend from us if they would need help on contact investigation on who that person has been around, who we should get a hold of and make sure that they have been will be quarantined, but we will get our direction from Minnesota Department of Health on if there is a positive case on what we should do for contact investigation.
When you say we, you mean Southwest Health and Human Services, or who are you talking about?
So what I mean is our nurses. So we have some disease prevention and control nurses who would be involved in this contact investigation piece.
So if it turns out that somebody is received a positive diagnosis and you are investigating to find out who they've been in contact with, would you be contacting those other people and saying you need to be aware?
Yes, it would be. We would be contacting them to see on if they have been around other people at that time as well. So it's kind of it gets to be a bigger time, I guess, with making sure to see who they've all been in contact with and then making sure if they've been showing symptoms, they need to quarantine at that time. So it goes into depth. It's pretty large.
It's exponential. It just keeps getting bigger.
Yep.
Bigger and bigger. How would people know if they're no longer contagious? And when should they stop the home isolation if they do end up being told they should be quarantined?
One thing that we have heard from Minnesota Department of Health is on the distancing. So when they will know that they can officially leave their home is, for example, if a person has a fever and coughing for 4 days, you may need to stay home for 3 more days with no fever. So that is a total of 7 days while at home. Another example would be if they have a fever, they're coughing for 5 days. You would need to stay home for 3 more days with no fever. So that would be a total of 8 days.
What about the other people in the house at the time? Are they all effectively quarantined too?
So what happens with living with a family, and we do have, this is on if there's a positive COVID case.
Mm-hmm.
So that person would be kind of quarantined in their own home. We suggest that that person goes to either a basement and they are all by themselves down there and all the rest of the family is upstairs, because then they are using their own products, healthcare products or shampoo, toothbrush, all of that, all downstairs. And then disinfecting as they go around, because you want to make sure you're not transferring it to family members upstairs.
Here at the KLGR studios, you might have noticed that there's Lysol, there's disinfecting wipes all over the place. And how contagious is it by touch? I mean, is this an overreaction?
Yep. So what I've heard from Minnesota Department of Health is that it can be on a surface. For sure, it's 72 hours.
Okay.
So it can be on a surface for a rather long time. So that's why disinfecting and making sure to clean all the frequently touched objects, such as doorknobs, is a really good practice, especially with all of the other, the flu going around, the cold. I mean, you're just protecting on any diseases right now.
To make this a little more real, could each of you just tell about how life is different at your workplace right now? Let's start off with Tom here. At the city council meeting on Tuesday, I couldn't help noticing that almost all the chairs had been removed from the city council chambers, and the councilors were sitting at least 10 feet apart.
We decided to take the action of social distancing, which right now I think is around 6 feet is the current guideline. And so we decided to put that in practice for ourselves. We had one council person who had traveled out of the country and was coming back from vacation, and we were going to have a quorum anyway, so that council person opted to not attend in order to not expose any of us. You know, the social distancing rule is something we're also putting in place at Daktronix. And so we have 174 employees at Daktronix, and we work in teams. And so this has been exceedingly challenging for us, but we have broken those down into smaller groups. We've provided separate break rooms for those groups and created zones within our factory. And I won't go too far down the path there, but we've created separate entrances, separate parking spaces, separate restrooms. So with the idea that if we were to have a positive test in our factory, we would have the ability to clean that certain area and have some idea, because the investigation is kind of difficult, as we just heard. So you know, we could clean an area, have the rest of the factory continue to operate, and go back to business as usual as quickly as we can.
And at the city council meeting, it was also mentioned about at the city level, you have the different departments all sort of quarantining from each other. Like it was mentioned, I think it was like the street workers and the public utilities workers used to get together for lunch.
For coffee.
They
took a break together. And that, you know, that's very common in workplaces, right? You tend to have some people you congregate with. And we brought these things to the city. I actually talked to Keith quite a bit about what we're doing at Daktronix. And he then thought about his own work groups and how we could demonstrate some best practices here.
At the hospital and the clinic, how are things different in terms of how the staff is interacting with each other in the different departments?
So we are trying to do the social distancing as much as we can. And so the changes are that, first of all, we're not seeing as many patients at the clinic. And when the nurses are at their stations, they're maintaining that 6 feet apart, as are the other employees. The other changes you'll see are for at registration. There is a tape marker on the floor that is 6 feet away from the receptionist so that we maintain that distance. Also in break rooms, the chairs are removed, or at meetings. If we are in a meeting, there's a couple of options, so you have to maintain that 6 foot apart, or WebEx is what we've been doing for a lot of our meetings. So you stay in your own office, and then we'll remotely connect with that. The other thing is I spend a lot of time in meetings now instead of seeing patients. So as part of the incident command, things change day to day and sometimes hour by hour of how we do things. And so a lot of the time is spent in meetings and how we are going to approach this.
Okay. Lauren, at the Southwest Health and Human Services office, how are things different now in terms of how you're acting with clients and other staff members?
Yeah. So we have also taken an approach to social distancing. So a lot of our courthouses that we are in for our Southwest Health and Human Services office, a lot of them have closed down to clients. So we have taken an approach on making sure to post on the doors saying, if you come to our office, please call our front desk and we will come down to help you. However, we have also put a notice saying, if you have any symptoms or if you have been sick within the past 72 hours, we do recommend you calling us and then not coming into our office. We had also have our incident command open, so we are distancing ourselves within those meetings 6 feet. And then we have also made sure to kind of spread out our offices on making sure that staff aren't really close together within the cubicle distance away from each other.
So far we've been talking about the health impact, but there's also an economic impact. And Tom, I was wondering if you could mention about some of the steps the city is taking to have to deal with the fact that all these businesses in town are struggling.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to answer. There's so much impact of really, really everyone at some level. You know, obviously our restaurants have been closed and some of the hair salons, and the list really goes on and on. I've been really impressed by the creative nature in which some of these businesses are trying to keep things going. So a lot of I've seen a lot of Facebook posts of some of these restaurants doing curbside pickup. So yeah, I'd really ask everyone just to support those businesses as best you can. You know, shop locally. There's a real opportunity to do that online, potentially. Some of these businesses have online presence that I bet most of us don't even know about. You know, we've had a habit of going in there personally, but I bet if you did a little searching, if you're at home and you have a little time, you know, go seek out these local businesses and see what they have to offer online and see what they can do to deliver. I bet some of those things are getting creative and changing, and so reach out to them and see what you can do to help.
On Tuesday, there was a little talk after the city council meeting about the city needs to maybe develop some strategies, like for people who might have trouble paying their utility bills or businesses who might have trouble paying fees and such.
Right. So we did talk about that. You know, we know this is really a difficult time on many, many people. So we encourage you to reach out to the city. If you think you're going to struggle with paying your utility bill, certainly reach out to them. They want to be helpful. They want you to have the services you need. You know, there's probably going to be an extension. We're waiting for some direction from the state about, you know, winter weather rules. Maybe some of those kinds of things will be extended. But I saw a note from our gas utility saying, hey, reach out to us. You know, we're not going to shut off your gas. We know that this is a difficult time. And so reach out to your utilities and they're wanting to work with you. No, and everyone's going through this in a very different way. And so if you're struggling with those things, reach out and ask for help.
One of my standard last questions when I'm discussing issues with people is, what am I forgetting to ask? What do you want to get out there that I am not asking about?
So I really want to take a moment to really thank the Redwood Area School District for the work that they're doing. They have spent an awful lot of time and effort and got mobilized really quickly to provide some of the meals that are so necessary to support some of our students. And we're working on some other things to support our senior citizens as well. So there's some things that we're trying to work out really hard to get those things done. But the rack has been closed. The senior dining has been closed there. And so we're working on those things to come up with alternatives to those. One positive note is that the library services are available. So you can't go in the library, but the lobby is open. It is staffed. If you want to check out something, knock on the window or pick up the phone, mm-hmm. and you can get that done. Go online, and they can retrieve those books for you and make sure that's going to be available. So there is services there. That we're going to continue to operate, which I think is a neat thing during this time.
And City Hall is still open, although you're encouraging people to do as much as possible online or over the phone.
Correct. So certainly can make some payments over the phone as an option. We saw an increase in online statements, you know, that kind of thing, billing online. That's a good thing anyway. It makes things simpler. The lobby is open. We are, you know, deploying that social distance plan. So we've got some measures in place to be able to protect our staff. We're limiting the staff movement within that facility as well as anybody from the outside. The mayor, the council people are not allowed into the city offices right now. We've moved the mailboxes, and we've done some simple things to allow us to continue to operate in that way. But we're trying to limit just that contact with each other. The big joke around here is kind of the toilet paper hoarding. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an engineer, so this is we may not use this, but just a side note. You know, I'm an engineer. We don't use any more toilet paper than we ever did. There is no season to toilet paper, so you're not going to use any more than you did. But I would ask that if you run in short supply, you know, reach out and ask someone for it. It's maybe a little embarrassing, but go ahead and do that. We don't want you flushing things down the toilet that is not toilet paper. That's becoming a bit of a problem, and so we really encourage you to not do that and think about another way you can dispose
of that.
That
ended up being the lead story on KLGR today, and I had to sit here and read the press release from the city and thinking, okay, this is my life now, as I'm telling people not to put things, you know, down the toilet that they're not supposed to. But it can cause problems for the city and for the sewer system, and it's not a joke.
It's not a joke. I mean, it could, if it leads to a plug, there's going to be sewer backups. The system is not designed for anything other than toilet paper in the toilet. So really, I need everyone to really think about that and really adhere to that, because this could cause even more problems and more stress on people if they have a sewer backup at their house.
Right.
What I wanted to say is thank you to the community, as well as thank you for the healthcare community that's come together and is working as a team. Patients and people within the community may not realize, but what applies one day may not apply the next day. And so things are very fluid and we change as necessary. We also, as healthcare providers, wanted to thank the school for the work that they have done and also coming together to provide daycare for our children that are school age that we didn't know exactly what to do with. So we thank them for that.
Yes, I definitely say this big event that's going on, it is taking all communities partners together. I mean, we are all in this together, so please just be kind with one another, because this is a very stressful time. We know that, but we're all trying to figure out the answers and make sure all of our communities are safe and protected. No matter what, we are always out here, and we recommend check out Southwest Health and Human Services website, because we are updating that constantly, as well as Southwest Health and Human Services Facebook page on situational awareness updates on just really what's been going on in the public health world, because we've gotten some of those questions. So please check out those pages and let us know if you have any questions.
The only thing, I think, who knows if I'd ever be on the radio again, but I really think we need to talk about infection prevention and ways that you can prevent an infection for yourself. There's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of things that you can't control. What you can control is washing your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water, staying home if you're sick. Really adhere to those guidelines that you should really stay home if you're sick. You're protecting the whole community when you stay home when you're sick.
Okay, one last question, unless I think of another. You all have different sources of information. I know the situation we're in right now is very much an unprecedented, and nobody really knows what's going on, but do you have any idea of how long this situation might last? As some people are thinking, well, you know, a couple of weeks. Some people are saying a couple of months. Have you heard anything?
For me, I guess this, I was going to say this as well. I really think we need to go to credible sources for our information. So the CDC, the Department of Health, the local public health, because you will find a variety of answers and a variety of things. I've heard more than one doctors that aren't within the United States talk about how excellent the CDC is and how what a wonderful resource they are for the United States and for the world. So I really think we need to be mindful where we're getting our information. Those are the places I go to for my information. Sometimes you might need to shut off the local media. I don't mean KLGR, but you know, maybe you need to turn off the news for a little bit. And if it's something that you're questioning, is that correct or not, really go to the CDC, go to the Department of Health, go to those credible resources.
That reminds me what you said just now. I saw something, I was reading it's a news website, and there was a writer saying, well, I've been socially isolating myself for years. I'm a full-time writer. I sit in my room. But he had an emergency the other day. He ran out of coffee, and so he had to run to the store to get more coffee. And he said the most amazing thing happened is I was in the store, and it was calm. And people were being polite to each other, and people were looking out for each other. And he said, you don't get that from watching the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so life is going on, and it's something to be aware of. But I think a big part of what my job is right now is to keep people realistic, and part of being realistic is to tamp down the hysteria, if at all possible.
And you can't stress that enough. Be kind to one another. Be sensible about some of the decisions that you're making. You know, help each other out in a reasonable way. I mean, the advantage of living in a small community as we do is we have less opportunities to have exposure of this way. So if we behave in the right ways, adhere to the social distancing, wash your hands, we're going to get through this just fine.